It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul, and alongside contributors Dave, Leah, and Hans, we will be exploring a wormhole teleportation breakthrough. Solar flares, giant asteroids, alien invasion, Y2K, and how to survive an apocalypse. Also, Juggalos versus the FBI. And Juggalos versus the apocalypse. Who would win? So let's step into the first exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Welcome back. Researchers are one step closer to making science fiction a reality. Spaceships have traveled through wormholes in movies like Star Wars, Star Trek, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Interstellar. But now scientists at Caltech say they have simulated a baby wormhole and even transmitted a message through it. Astrophysicist Hakeem Elusei joins me live now for more on this.
But what we're talking about here is a wormhole. So a wormhole in reality is something that the laws of physics allow. And if you have enough stuff in space, you can create a black hole. And under certain conditions, two black holes can combine to create this shortcut through space-time. And so what these researchers have done is attempted to build one inside of a computer, but not just any computer, a quantum computer.
Now, this is the first time I've actually read this myself. Quantum teleportation opens a wormhole in space-time. Now, this is from physicsworld.com. Quantum teleportation opens a wormhole in space-time.
So are they saying they actually did quantum teleportation? Or just like, if we could figure out quantum teleportation, we could probably open some wormholes?
It says the equivalent to a wormhole in space-time has been created on a quantum processor.
Okay, the key word there is equivalent.
It used an advanced quantum teleportation protocol to open the wormhole and send quantum signals through it.
An advanced quantum teleportation protocol? They have those? Can you access those protocols?
Yeah, exactly. Like where do you sign up?
Who's teleporting around? Can I just have that protocol teported over to me? I'd like a quantum delivery of my quantum protocol, please.
And just to refresh, Dave, a wormhole is a bridge in space-time that connects two different locations. But they haven't actually been observed by physicists.
But now they've observed the equivalent. That's pretty vague. What is the equivalent of a wormhole? Like a hole in the scientist's pudding?
Maria Spiropoulou. Sorry.
Spiropoulou.
Say that again. So now who?
Maria Spiropoulou.
Okay, at Caltech, and colleagues have done such an experiment. Their aim was to create a system that has the right ingredients for the type of teleportation that resembles a wormhole.
You're telling me you don't know who Maria Spiropoulou is?
Is she famous?
I have her trading card. She's like one of the best wormhole equivalent makers on the planet. She can juggle qubits with the best of them.
In their experiment, and on a quantum processor, no one has observed this in real life, I guess, the researchers showed that they could keep a wormhole open for a sufficient amount of time by applying negative energy shockwaves, which came in the form of special pulses of quantum fields.
Wow, I need a special pulse because most of the pulses of quantum fields that I deal with are just average.
Yes, where do you get a special pulse of quantum fields?
I think we've got a writer who maybe has properly dug into the shockwaves, because it's a hard thing to write about, negative energy shockwaves, quantum information exiting the wormhole intact.
But yet,
they don't even call it a wormhole. They call it a wormhole experience. The wormhole experience is something they should open up at Disneyland.
The Force. Authentic.
Oh, I think we're kicking a few G's here.
I can't feel my face. I'm numb.
The sensation. Real.
I can't lift my hand.
Is there still gravity?
The experience. Unbelievable. Mission Space at Epcot, like no thrill on Earth.
Like, Epcot Center is so 80s, now we have the wormhole experience. You walk into the this giant, like, tubule, and you never come out. You're just sent across the dimensions. You're turned into qubits, and, like, you end up in some crazy alternate Disney dimension with Mickey Mouse looking at you through a digital eye. And yes, that is the scary thing. Mickey Mouse does exist in the alternate dimension. Like, if you're going to be going through that wormhole, there's fucking Mickey greeting you with a cigarette and a glass of whiskey, saying, "It ain't going to be pretty, buddy."
I thought this was interesting. Signals that travel through a wormhole experience, a series of scrambling and unscrambling, with the quantum information exiting the wormhole intact. Is that what beam me up?
The scrambling and unscrambling, yes. I think what they're trying to say here is that they have teleportation, and now they're using it to make wormholes. But what they forgot to announce is that they have teleportation. Someone should have said, talk to us about that one first, because that's interesting too.
There has been experiments where a very small amount of teleportation has taken place.
In 2017, Chinese scientists were able to teleport a photon to a satellite in the lower Earth orbit, LEO of Earth. This news spread like wildfire. Some even thought that teleportation that was shown in Star Trek was now possible. But it wasn't the case. What they achieved was, in fact, quantum teleportation. What teleportation actually means is dematerializing a body from one place and materializing it at another. But what the scientist obtained was quantum teleportation, which means transferring quantum information without any medium.
If someone would send me a jumbo shrimp right now, just scramble it and then re-scramble it, or put it back in the egg, and then make that appear in front of me. Well, I don't think you don't even need to move a human, because if you move like a shrimp or something, it doesn't matter if it's dead. Like, if you re-scramble it wrong and it looks funny, maybe you just don't eat it.
It would taste the same, though, wouldn't it? Really?
But you can't send Uncle Jasper and Auntie Jane to Christmas dinner through a teleporter just yet. They'll be coming, though. They'll be coming at no matter what, because I'm going to through. This is today's quantum processors. It seems like they've made massive leaps here.
One other thing they were saying in this article is an important challenge that they first had to overcome is that it appeared that a large number of qubits would be needed to perform the experiment properly. They discovered that they could create the wormhole dynamics on 9 qubits. On a Google Sycamore quantum processor. So Google's in on this.
Is that part of, can you just access that through Google Cloud? Just that quantum processor? Like upgrade to, like, for this task, I need a quantum processor.
In September of 2019, there were rumors of a paper where Google claimed that it had achieved quantum supremacy. In October of that year, Google released the paper stating that it had achieved quantum supremacy with its quantum computer, which had run calculations for a task in 200 seconds, and that the same task would take the most powerful supercomputers at least 10,000 years to solve.
How much do you have to pay to get access to those special quantum waves? And those negative energy waves that are obviously available on Google Sycamore.
I feel like eventually everyone's going to need wormhole experience, and they'll be teaching wormhole, they'll be offering wormhole experiences in schools to train the youth in how to deal with, travel through, and make wormholes. It will be a bit of a dangerous class, though.
Every morning starts the same. Coffee and crossword. And every day things seem to get worse. Religious conflict. Climate change. It all seems so apocalyptic. None of this is new, however. We've been predicting the end of the world for thousands of years, from Nostradamus all the way back to the Book of Revelation. Something about the drama of annihilation seems to grip us. Is it just human nature to worry and wonder about the end of days? Or is it really coming?
If you should awake some morning, tomorrow morning, let's say, if you should wake to a man-dead world, where virtually all of human life had been dissolved from the face of the earth, leaving behind only buildings, bridges, machines, if you should awake to such a world tomorrow morning, what would you do? Where would you go?
I'm excited about this because even though this topic is a bit, well, it's, some may say, a bit dark, but it's, we're trying to have fun with it as a thought experiment. And that is, we're wondering what we would do if we were caught up in an apocalypse of some kind.
An apocalyptic event.
But what's interesting first is to think about all of the various ways that could bring upon
apocalyptic events.
And these are things that are actually legitimate concerns by governments and leaders.
Yeah, risk mitigation, you know, stuff you got to plan for.
We got a little list here we put together. So one of the natural ways that could happen is by a solar flare. So a massive corona mass ejecta from the sun could apparently wipe out all of our technology. And all of a sudden, nothing would work.
Yeah, some kind of, you know, intense, crazy sunstorm that just bombarded us with inordinate amounts of solar wind and knock out all of our energy systems and telecommunication systems. And
yeah, and another one is a supervolcano. A supervolcano, a volcanic explosion so massive that it ultimately blocks out the sun for years. And you can imagine what would happen to humanity there.
There's a volcano beneath Yellowstone National Park, but it's not your average volcano. It's hundreds of meters deep and capable of eruptions thousands of times more violent than anything we've ever witnessed. This is a super volcano. If Yellowstone's volcano erupted, it would be catastrophic. The eruption would shoot a tower of ash into the air taller than Mount Everest, covering nearby cities in over a meter of ash and creating giant clouds that would block the sun for decades. Ultimately, global temperatures would drop, plants would die, and agriculture would fail.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's happened before in the past.
Yeah, so a supervolcano. Then we have your classic asteroid.
Poor dinosaurs.
The asteroid was 6 miles wide, weighing hundreds of billions of tons. It would have hit at nearly 50,000 miles per hour. The energy released would be equal to about 100 million nuclear bombs. This was the hypothesis for how the age of dinosaurs ended.
And of course, there's maybe a massive disease, so some mystery illness that takes out, you know, 95% of humanity.
The Black Plague.
Yeah, the Black Plague did happen in Europe, and I don't think it was like something like 50 or 60% of the population.
A lot of people, yeah.
In the less than natural department, we have AI takeover, where artificial intelligence, you know, basically decides human beings are superfluous and just...
too much of a problem, not logical, you know, just don't make sense in the system anymore. Delete. Beep.
A Cold War classic would be the nuclear, a nuclear war.
Nuclear winter. Yep.
That's a classic, isn't it, by now?
It used to be. I don't want to go there, but, you know, sadly it's become more close to real than it has been maybe ever.
Oh, here's a good one. Alien invasion.
That's a classic.
And that's a classic. And an alien species that decides that we're it's slaves or whatever.
Maybe we're being watched right now. There's a duck blind mission, you know, prelude to invasion.
There's, of course, sudden and catastrophic climate change.
Yeah, or just the gradual worsening of...
And a Cybergeddon, which I guess is cyber war. But these are possible Armageddon scenarios that governments really do worry about.
Yeah, or at least should think about if they haven't.
So for our thought experiment, Leah, so let's say the first one is a solar flare. And now all systems are rendered useless, including your car, apparently.
A solar flare, or a coronal mass ejection, is basically when the sun bathes the entire planet in a wave of solar energy. And according to a paper in the Astrophysical Journal, we're overdue for one. The blast would create a sudden power surge, one strong enough to overwhelm the world's electronics and wipe out all power grids, devices, and even the internet. Taking out our entire power system would fundamentally change the world, especially since experts believe the power could stay out for as long as 2 years.
In that particular scenario, I would head to our family farm, and you know where there's wood and a fireplace and a big fresh water lake, and land.
Okay, so you're talking about arable land, and you're talking about going back to the land, as it were,
not requiring energy, being able to warm yourself and cook and. Feed yourself and have access to potable water.
My first question to you about that is, You're living in the city, in this case is Toronto, so we'll imagine Toronto, and the family farm you spoke about, which is actually a very rare thing for anyone else to have access to, but you have access to one. It's a long way away from here. It takes 3 hours to drive.
Yeah, 2.5 to 3 hours.
So how are you going to get there?
If you had gas in your car, you might be able to drive it. If its computer system didn't get knocked out.
Well, it would, though. See, it has computer systems now that would render it probably undrivable.
If you have access to a basement or a cave, maybe you can survive underground for, you know.
Oh, should we find a cave just in case?
Yeah, you might want to know where your local cave is and, you know, have a whole lot of Spam and bottled water.
You mean the canned ham? Kind of thing,
yeah. Or you know, buy a couple barrels from Jim Baker.
Welcome to the Jim Baker Show. Here are your hosts, Jim and Lori Baker.
The collapse is coming. Doomsday clock for global market crash strikes 1 minute to midnight. You hear that, John?
Bible says you're going to throw gold and silver in the streets
tomorrow.
we could look back and say yesterday was the last day to order and get prepared.
This offer comes with 22 buckets, plus a bonus of 6 additional buckets for a total of 28 buckets.
I want to show you something. All this food is for a gift of $2,500. 8 years of bulk food. This is what you should be doing.
Even if you couldn't drive, it would be worth walking to the farm, bringing what food supplies you had to get there. It would be a long walk, but...
Well, yeah, wouldn't it be weeks? How long would it take to walk? How many kilometers? I guess it's about 400 kilometers, 300 or 400 kilometers, right?
It's 300 kilometers.
Okay, so 300 kilometers. Walking?
Maybe a week, you know, but like it's going to be a solid walk, but you know, hopefully you have enough supplies in your pantry and wear really comfortable shoes.
It'd be really difficult to get out of the city, don't you think?
Easier on foot than by car. That's for sure.
Like what if there was literally, you know, infinite gridlock?
There'd be a lot of then you're better off walking. No, or biking, if you have bikes, bike it.
Oh, bike would be good.
Yeah, it's like having a horse. It's like having your own horse.
This is a bicycle. I learned to ride when I was about 4 years old. And ever since then, there's just been something that I like about bicycles. Maybe I like them because the only limiting factor to the distance I can travel on a bicycle is my own body. I can take one down the block or around the world.
It's another sunny day and you're out for your morning jog when you notice something strange. The birds seem to be acting funny and are louder than usual. All of a sudden, a great big shadow is cast over you. The sky turns dark as thousands of unknown crafts blot out the sun. Uh-oh, looks like we've got company. What now? Pay close attention. This is How to Survive an Alien Invasion.
Here, what if it was an alien invasion? I guess, what, you'd be part of a resistance or so, or what would it be?
I don't know. Depends on the aliens and what they want, but... unless there's a good reason to join a resistance, I would probably try to stay outside of their reach. And even if you were part of a resistance, you would have to be able to stay outside of their reach and then just strategically engage with them because...
But what if they just wanted to eat you? Like, literally eat you?
Tasty, tasty human snack. This is their farm. They come to, like, pluck snacks. It's like the vending machine for this alien species.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
We can think of a number of scenarios, but let's just imagine for a second that maybe it was a blast from the sun that took all of the electrical grid and all the machines and all means of computers and all means of communications offline and maybe forever. It has rendered human technology as we know it useless. Systems begin to fail. The apocalypse is upon us. Society has collapsed. And I ask you, Dave, what would you do? Who would you be and what character would you be in that case, in that situation where?
Well, it's no brainer. I would, if I could, and I know it's not necessarily going to be possible, but if I could, it would be a hole up in the compound situation. Get like a place with a little arable land, something off the grid, a sweet white picket fence perimeter. Might be not so sweet if marauders tried to break through. couple of secret defense mechanisms. But mostly I would try to live in peace in the country and away from as many people as possible. I do think about that. I do think everybody should think about that. Now, that's not necessarily possible, right? So you're saying, what would character would I be if I was forced to be in the city in those times? Which would be a grand failure on my part, because you really do not want to be in the city in those times. Even the beginning of COVID was pretty brutal.
But you weren't able to anticipate this particular imagined disaster. It happened instantly, so you might have been stuck in the city.
Well, I think the key is preparation. Like, I do believe it's very important, because on the 98% chance you never have to use it, it's kind of fun to think about. And on the 2% chance you do have to use it, it's really fucking handy.
So have you prepped? Are you a prepper?
No, but I know it would be a good idea. I mean, I do have my old survival kits in the basement. That's not going to do me much good in that situation.
Oh, wait, you have survival kits in your basement right now?
Well, yeah, we used to sell them. So I have the old prototypes.
Are you talking about the Y2K survival kits?
Yeah, they're still valid. In fact, I noticed in there was actually a pandemic survival kit, which I found after the pandemic was over, which had masks and hand sanitizer and stuff. So we were selling that in the major upheaval.
So let's call it a pop-up business and right around the Y2K dilemma, and you had a solution, developed a solution, and you produced how many survival kits?
With tens of thousands. Yeah, we had them selling all across the USA.
There still exists a general state of either denial, complacency, or even apathy about both the reality and the potential effects of Y2K. At the stroke of midnight, January 1st, 2000, elevators may stop, heat may vanish, credit cards and ATMs may cease to function, airplanes and trains may come to a halt.
People were terrified the world was going to end.
We got on CBS Sunday Morning. They featured it. They opened up. We had the minor disruption, which was like in a paint can, and it had like stuff like fishing line and candles and blanket and iodine tablets for purifying water if you have to like drink out of a dirty puddle or whatever. We were ready for that shit.
All right, so in the case of Y2K, if society had collapsed because of this incredible bug that would bring down everything, how many tiers of survival kits?
We had the minor disruption and the major upheaval.
What was in the major upheaval kit?
Well, that I still have that in my basement now. It's got that. That's what had the pandemic kit. It had it's hilarious that I didn't. When the pandemic hit, I didn't think to look in the major upheaval, even though I've been sitting in my basement for 20 years. It would have been really handy to have those masks before.
Oh, so there was masks in there?
Yeah, there were masks.
From 2000, 1999.
99, yeah. We had America ready.
And you could have gone down to your basement at the height of the pandemic and grabbed those masks and other things that were in there. And what was the... Was there anything else?
Strangely, there was a Barney video, like a VHS Barney, or no, a DVD Barney video.
Wait a minute, what do you mean?
Like Barney the giant dinosaur.
Barney is a dinosaur from our imagination, and when he's tall, he's what we call a dinosaur sensation.
I never even bothered opening up the pandemic kit. Like, gross, I don't want to open that. But then after the pandemic, I went in the basement. I looked in the major upheaval because I was looking for candles or something. And then I opened up the pandemic kit, and it had masks, hand sanitizer, like proper 3M N64 masks or whatever. N95s.
N95.
Yeah, N64. And a couple of game controllers. But no, but they did have Barney. They did have a Barney video, which I was like, I bought it as a pre-packed pandemic kit and put it in the major upheaval, which was in a giant tote, because there was also a portable shower in there, a portable toilet, which seems stupid, come to think of it, because at that point, everyone's just shitting everywhere.
So you and a partner came up with the idea for a Y2K survival kit, which could apply to our current imagined apocalypse.
Oh yeah, we should have totally kept it open because it was just like the doom and gloom ever since then. The Y2K was a joke, but everything else has been real.
For an ordered society to descend into chaos. Even those that walk the straight and narrow are tempted to behave uncharacteristically under cover of darkness. You know, taking advantage, looting, stealing, mugging, avoided by the fact that nobody can see what they're up to in the dark.
So I guess it doesn't matter too much how it happened, but Armageddon has happened and civilization has collapsed as we know it. So in that scenario, Leah, which one are you? Do you join a Mad Max type gang? Do you start some kind of tribe or what do you?
Yeah, no, definitely I'm an outskirts person. more of a Fahrenheit 451 kind of person who would, you know, go and try to join or co-create a society on the outskirts of the Mad Max gang.
Chaos.
And yeah, memorize books or something and maintain some kind of cultural memory on the outskirts.
What would you do? You try and preserve like human
beauty, knowledge. Yeah, like, you know.
How would you go about it, though?
I think memorization works. Oral history works.
In your avoidance of the Mad Max type chaos or whatever, you would go out into not exactly the wilderness, but...
It might well be wilderness, yeah.
So imagine you're in a rural setting.
Yeah.
Then you get into all those things about the various life skills that you would need in order to survive.
You would develop them, yeah.
What if you wanted to start a more like a simple agrarian society? You know, you formed a small village of 50 people. There would be questions of like, who's in charge? Who does what? How do you build fences? And what if someone broke the law?
Yeah, well, I would want to. And even if you're memorizing poetry or not, you have to live in these outskirts societies. It would be cooperative. You'd co-design it, and you would have more natural leadership.
Natural leadership, what does that mean?
Well, people who have a tendency to lead would tend to lead in any group of people. And I'm one of those people. But I would want to share it with other people who have similar tendencies, and I would want there to be collaborative processes for decision-making, because you want to have a cooperative society. And a fair society. Go back to basics. Use the circle, talking circles.
The major problem, one of the major problems, for there are several, one of the many major problems with governing people is that of who you get to do it, or rather of who manages to get people to let them do it to them. To summarize, it is a well-known and much lamented fact that those people who most want to rule people are, ipso facto, those least suited to do it. To summarize the summary, anyone who is capable of getting themselves made president should on no account be allowed to do the job. To summarize the summary of the summary, people are a problem.
Now, what about, Lee, of this, your society that you've now formed and is living in peace, counters an invasion from another group?
What are they invading for?
To take all your stuff.
If you have warning, because you have some kind of defensive intelligence gathering mechanism, and if what they're looking for is stuff, then you have vacated. And I mean, if it's easy for you to get that stuff, you can leave stuff for them and just, you know, take off, let them get their stuff that they want.
They'll just keep coming. That's what the Vikings did.
Yeah, well, then at a certain point, you may have to fight or move. I'm assuming that the Mad Max invaders outnumber you. I mean, if that's not the case, then you fight. If they're a minority and you can, like, you can win without them just returning, then you can fight. If not, and you've got enough space and resources, then the whole point is stay on the outskirts. And so then the boundaries of the outskirts have changed and you need to withdraw.
So you would have some warriors?
Yeah, but you're also just gone by the time that people get there. You're living more semi-nomadic life. Like, it's more adept in a Mad Max world to be nimble. No point in being, you know, building a village. You want to stay far away from them and you don't want to be on their radar. You don't want to be a source of, like, go and get stuff from you.
Okay, so you're talking about very remote.
Yeah, as remote as you can be. You're better off adapting and eating, you know, whale blubber than, you know, having to deal with raids by... If they're really just wanting stuff and they don't want to have to fight for it, then they're welcome to join. That's the point, as long as they're going to contribute.
So a Mad Maxer can make make a pilgrimage to your remoteness and then...
Yeah, you can be a member if you're going to be a contributing member, right? Like, you don't have to come and, like, take stuff.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery. The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
But when you were saying that you wanted to, you would retreat to an agrarian situation, you know, a piece of land and a perimeter zone that you would defend and grow your own food, I guess. And I guess you'd have to hunt, so you'd have to have weapons.
I don't think I'd have to hunt.
Well, how would you? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to eat meat.
Oh, I see. So you would harvest, as it were, or gather.
And maybe I'd have to hunt. Who knows? I don't think I'd be good at hunting.
But you would need a gun. Really? Right? Because you were saying you'd have to... So where would this be? Where would this perimeter zone be? In Canada? Because in Canada, we have a lot of land that we could...
There's so much land, yeah. I mean, it's just unpleasant land for 6 months of the year. But it's also not great... Yeah, like, no one's coming to take that land in February either. Like, maybe we could all try to hold on to a little piece of Miami.
But if you were stuck in the city during this imagined apocalypse, would you see yourself as a leader? Would you join create a gang or a posse or a community?
It'd be nice to start a community. That sounds nice. But I don't want to get into any leaders and any gangs. The key would be to get away from the fray. And I'd be happy to do that in the community. It'd be much nicer. But I think at a certain point in that scenario, communities don't work because everybody's fighting for their own survival and some more base instincts kick in, and then people are eating each other and causing, you know, stealing each other's crops. And
we're living in Toronto right now. So if you wanted to go to the, like, less populated land, you'd have to walk very far?
Well, I guess it depends. Like, there's probably going to be vehicles going around. There's a lot of vehicles out there.
But surely the gas would run, because the infrastructure is... You need a lot of energy to refine gas. So
there's no power, yeah.
It would eventually... You'd maybe get a few weeks of power, but after that...
We'd probably commandeer some horses and ride across the plains. Or you could hike, you know. I once met a juggler who hiked from Oshawa to go to a concert.
The FBI targets the Insane Clown Posse.
This is the first time a fan base has ever been labeled a gang by the FBI.
Yeah, we should talk about the juggalos.
By day, they are your accountant, your neighbor, your cousin. But when night falls, they morph into an alter ego. Fearsome to some, a symbol of decadence to others, but unified in one commonality. Love of the Insane Clown Posse. But is this band and its followers, known as Juggalos, a threat to society?
First of all, it's a very scary look.
So can all their fans be considered a gang?
So who are the Juggalos? Are they a fervent fan base, a cult, or a legitimate threat to society? After criminal activity by members of the Juggalo Nation, the FBI puts another label on them. Gang members.
It's not a gang, but it's like a gang.
It's like a gang, but it's not a gang.
It's a family. Yeah,
it's a family. Right? Okay, so these are people who what? Like look to relationships with people other than their family that they want to have that sense of family or belonging. Like any subculture, I suppose, but this one stands out because even at one point, the FBI labeled them Juggalos, domestic terrorists.
Yeah. That's pretty silly.
It is silly. It's because now, like, if you've seen a Juggalo and what they look like, they can look kind of intimidating, maybe to the, you know, the untrained eye.
Or it could just look like someone who's like hanging out in a, like a Whitby mall in like 2001. But the FBI likes to do some you know, questionable assumptions.
Well, that's it. What happened was there is supposedly a tiny sliver of Juggalos who do identify as a gang, a criminal gang.
Yeah, like most people, there are some people who do some bad things. But are we going to have the not all Juggalo talk? Is this what this is segueing to?
No, I mean, I looked into it. I found it was actually pretty absurd that this group of like harmless people, for the most part, would be lumped in with domestic terrorism. And the more I looked into it, the more I started to see that it was just based on a kind of almost like a contagion of fear around just the amount of people that were all gathered in under one sort of banner. But they don't look normal, so to speak.
No, they definitely don't look normal.
So that alone seems to be enough to have brought about.
Yeah, so if you're not going to deviate, if you're deviating from some normie shit, you can get pegged.
So basically, watch out. If you're in a group with enough people who aren't like conforming to the norm, you also may get labeled by the FBI.
Yeah, I think there are more things to be concerned about than people looking weird and expressing themselves.
I once met a Juggalo who hiked from Oshawa to go to a concert.
Really, a Juggalo?
Yeah. Probably want him in my community during the apocalypse, put it that way. I don't know much about Juggalos, but he told me that he identified as a Juggalo.
Right.
And what I'm saying is he walked an extremely long distance. He walked like 60 kilometers, if he was to be believed. Did they rise out of the Insane Clown Posse, or is it totally different? They did.
At one point, the FBI targeted them.
Really? It's pretty amazing that they were able to create a movement that scared the man to the level that you're talking about. Nobody likes clowns. The man hates clowns more than terrorists because clowns scared them as a child. Terrorists didn't. In fact, the clowns, in a way, are terrorists because they scare so many people and they scare children. They scare everybody. So I think that the clowns should really watch out because if they're scaring so many people, they could probably make a case that they are a terrorist organization.
That's actually what happened with the FBI. They were labeled as a terrorist organization. Because so many people of, let's say, different mindset would gather in groups. And
well, I guess the words, the three words, insane, clown, posse. Okay, because the government don't like the insane. They don't like clowns. Nobody likes clowns. And they definitely do not like posses. So that's like the best band name ever.
Before we part, let me leave you with a paraphrased quote from famed physicist Albert Einstein, which reads, quote, "I do not know with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones." We hope you have enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery. Until next time.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.